villages of North America. All eyes had turned to him, Jamie realized. Tony's got the needle out of his hide by sinking it into me. My ancestors watched the stars, he said, measuring his words carefully. Reed said, Of course they did. In the desert where they lived, what else was there to do once the sun went down? But what did they accomplish outside of some tribal mumbo-jumbo? Jamie hesitated a heartbeat span, then answered. They recorded the great supernova of 1054, for one thing, carved the data into petroglyphs, even decorated pottery bowls with accurate drawings of where and when the supernova appeared.
Really?
Really? Jamie turned to the others. The supernova of 1054 is the one that created the Crab Nebula. You can see it in a telescope today. The only other astronomers to observe the supernova were in China.
Japan also, said Toshima.
Jamie nodded at him gravely. Japan also. Nobody in Europe paid any attention, apparently.
It was probably too cloudy that night, Reed said.
The supernova was visible to the naked eye for 23 days, Jamie countered. The Chinese records show that. So do the drawings my ancestors made. Even in England, the sky must have been clear for part of that time, but nobody there bothered to look up. Either that, or they were too ignorant of the stars to notice a new one blazing away each night. Ilona made a low whistle. Nagib chuckled softly. The others grinned and nodded. Tony Reed got slowly to his feet and made a slight bow in Jamie's direction.
Touché, he said.
And now, if no one objects, I think I'll make myself a spot of dinner. One by one, the others got up and began to prepare their evening meals. Jamie sat alone at the table, staring at his damaged helmet, wondering why human beings had to inflict pain on one another to gain respect. Mars arrival. For all the months that they had coasted across the dark emptiness between worlds, the members of the expedition had watched Mars steadily grow from a bright red star to a ruddy disk to a fully three-dimensional globe that hung before their eyes like a gigantic prize waiting to be seized. Once the two spacecraft established themselves in orbit around the planet, Jamie found himself spending hours at the observation port, watching the strange world of rust and brick and almost bloody reds. The window bristled with instruments now, but peering between them, Jamie could see Mars sliding past his feasting eyes slowly as the spacecraft turned in its stately revolutions. Jamie saw massive volcano cones projecting upward like the turreted eyes of lizards, staring at him impassively. The vast, twisted gash of Valles Marineris called to him with memories of river-carved canyons back home. He saw dust storms spring up and sweep across a quarter of the globe before dying away as mysteriously as they had started. Huge craters smashed out by ancient meteor strikes. Some of them had blasted out the smaller meteoroids that had eventually made their way to Earth to be found on the Antarctic ice.
Are you ready to go down there and start to work?
Jamie recognized Ilona Molitor's throaty voice even before he turned his head. He nodded solemnly.
Aren't you?
She gave a wintry smile.
After 9 months in this concentration camp, I'd be willing to run along the sand dunes in the nude.
Jamie laughed. In the reflected reddish light of Mars, Ilona's haughty face looked almost as coppery as Jamie's. Her short-cropped golden hair took on glints of fire.
"Have you remained celibate?" she asked,
the corner of her lips curving upward slightly. It was more of a challenge than a question, Jamie thought. He nodded once more.
"You must have interesting dreams," Ilona said.
He felt a surge of anger heating his face.
You know, Ilona, you have a reputation for being the local sex therapist.
Her smile widened.
And why not? Tony Reed assures me that no one aboard is carrying any communicable diseases worse than the cold you gave us all. Why not make life a little less tedious?
Less tedious, maybe, but a lot more tense.
Really?
Ilona arched a brow. I would think that sex lowers tensions among us.
Not among the Russians.
Ugh, them! Let them jerk each other off. Jamie huffed and turned away from her.
You're such a prude, Jamie, Ilona said, still smiling. I thought that once we made love you would relax, but you're not the kind who can take sex casually, are you? That's why we're here, he shot back, jabbing a finger toward the observation window and the red bulk of Mars hanging beyond. To explore that planet, not for high school fun and games. My God, you're so serious. We're on a serious mission, Alona. Very serious. I'm not hurting anyone. In fact, I think the tensions aboard this prison would have been a lot worse. Her eyes were dancing with amusement. Tony agrees with me. He says my contributions to the team's morale have been invaluable. Tell it to Mikhail and Dmitri. Come on now, Jamie. You could use some relaxation yourself. No thanks. Think of it as research, Ilona teased. I think you don't really get to know a man until you see him with his pants down. He stared at her for a wordless moment. Then, do Katrin and Joanna feel the same way? You mean, are they doing what I've been doing? He started to reply, but heard voices drifting toward them from the passageway. Tony Reed and Joanna Brumado turned the corner and stepped into the observation area. I thought it was you, Ilona, Reed said amiably. I'd recognize that sexy voice anywhere. Jamie realized his eyes were fixed on Joanna. With an effort, he pulled them away. The four of them chatted about the landing they would make the next day, keeping their talk strictly on the business of the expedition. Reed seemed casual and relaxed as ever. Joanna was serious, as usual, her dark eyes focused on Mars as if she realized for the first time that she was actually going to go down to the surface of that alien world. Jamie felt almost like an automaton. He answered questions they addressed to him, he spoke the correct words, and kept up his end of the four-way conversation, but his mind was racing, remembering the brief moments of wild animal heat he had shared with Ilona. Remembering the sad, solemn expression on Joanna's face when he had kissed her, wondering why he could not relax and play with Ilona and forget about everything else. I must get back to my quarters, Joanna said quietly, almost timidly. My father will be calling in another few minutes. Tony Reed held out his arm for her. I'll escort you there, if I may. She glanced toward Jamie, then back to Reed. Of course. Thank you. Ilona watched them leave the observation blister, an enigmatic smile playing across her face. Once they were out of earshot, she turned back to Jamie. The answer to your question is that Katrin has been much more discreet about her amours than I, and little Joanna, as far as I know, has been completely virtuous. Does that make you happy, Jamie? He nodded, trying to keep his face from betraying his emotions. But have you noticed, Ilona added devilishly, that Tony follows her wherever she goes. Jamie blinked, surprised. He does? Watch him, she said. He trails after her like a dog following a bitch in heat. That sly, smiling bastard, Jamie thought. Who lectures him? Who doctors his food? Tony's not satisfied with me or Katrin, Ilona went on. He wants the unobtainable. And so do I, Jamie realized. So do I. Sol 15, afternoon. This is kind of awkward, Edith, Jamie said into the camera. He was sitting on the bunk of his privacy cubicle, the vidcam perched on the flimsy little desk opposite him, focused on his face. First thing in the morning, before his scheduled work hours, he had suited up and gone outside to take a few minutes' worth of panoramic shots of the rocks and dunes and distant mountains in the area around the dome. Now he sat on his bunk, wondering what he should say to Edith. Yesterday we had a bit of a scare. Things still aren't quite back to normal yet. A stray meteorite punctured our dome. Just a little puncture. We never even found the meteorite. It must have been so small it evaporated from the energy of the impact. But it leaked out some of our air, and for a couple of minutes everything was pretty tense. He looked upward. The dome was bathed in sunlight. The pumps and fans were throbbing their usual low notes. Jamie could hear voices and the cowboy twang of a country and western song from somebody's tape player. We're still breathing pure oxygen in here. We've got to tiptoe around and be extremely careful. In a pure oxygen atmosphere, the slightest spark could set the whole dome on fire. Separators are accumulating nitrogen from the air outside, but we won't be back on normal air for another day or two. There wasn't any damage, except for the puncture itself, which Voznesensky and Paul Abel fixed inside of a couple of minutes.